This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by a new natural product from Future Farm Botanicals, created exclusively to help promote a better immune response: elderberry with zinc and echinacea. Future Farm's elderberry with zinc and echinacea is the first to combine these three powerful ingredients together. Elderberry is packed with antioxidants, vitamins, and may boost your immune system. Echinacea has been shown to activate chemicals in the body that decrease inflammation. And zinc activates T lymphocytes. Low zinc has been associated with increased susceptibility. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216. Or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea is an all-natural, science-based formula and works without adverse side effects. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly summation of health news, and it's an opportunity for you to pose your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. And of course, we're in what looks to be about week 7 of the coronavirus pandemic lockdown. And with me today is our nutritionist in residence, Layla. How you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm, settling into a daily routine. You know, I wake up, I look out of the window longingly while, you know, I drink my decaf. That takes about a half an hour. And then I do some push-ups, I do some sit-ups. I try to stretch that out into about an hour and a half. I think I'm up to about 4,000 sit-ups per week.
Oh my goodness.
I have great abs. I mean, my abs are really amazing.
Kind of six-pack.
Yeah, then occasionally I'll do a telephone consult with a patient, or maybe, you know, if they're equipped, to Skype consult with a patient.
Yes.
Then I'll do a podcast. By then it's time to, you know, think about dinner. And, so I spent about an hour and a half puttering around in the kitchen, carefully washing every dish. And I enjoy doing that because it gives me something to do.
Sure.
You know, I listen to the discouraging news a lot, too much, you know, and everything is like an angry debate. You know, should we continue the lockdown? It's like, oh, you're killing people if you don't lock down. And then there's some people who are saying, let her rip, you know.
Yeah, well, or you're killing people for extending the lockdown. You know,
exactly.
There are sides.
Exactly.
So, probably.
It depends on which station I'm listening to.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And, then I've been taking nice runs. There's a ton of people out running. I mean, they're running. And, you know, when the weather gets nice.
It's a great way to work off steam and cabin fever and even anger.
Yes.
Really. And the whole situation. And
funny thing happens. You know, I go to a certain place to run. And, there's a nice open expanse by the East River. And there I see some refugees from the gym. You know, occasionally I run into, these are the very self-same folks that I would see in the gym all the time. And, you know, now they're doing best as they can, you know, outside, you know, speed walking or running,
yeah,
you know, trying to stay in shape. And, because I'm missing my swimming, I think the water's about 52 degrees, which is, I'm not going to, you know, I like brown fat, you know, and I want to, I want to get my cold exposure, but that's a little much. I think that's going to be.
Yeah. You need a wetsuit.
And a wetsuit. You need a dry suit, is what you need, because you know what a wetsuit does. A wetsuit gets wet, and then the idea is that the little amount of water that's sandwiched between you and the wetsuit gets warmed by your skin. Well, that's fine when it's like maybe 70 degrees. You know, that'll keep you comfortable. But
not when it's 52.
Well, it's 52 degrees. You know, you get in the water, you're going to get an ice cream headache. You know, you're going to, your fingers are going to be numb. Your teeth are going to be chattering. It's a little, I'm not, these people do these polar swims. You know, it's like, I don't think so. That's not for me.
Oh, I know. The polar bears. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof.
Not just the polar bear. There are actually people who do, like, they go to the Arctic.
It's a club. It's a club. I know. Aren't they called the polar bears?
Well, that's the ordinary folks who go to Coney Island. They run in the water screaming, and they dip in, and they run out. But there's actually athletes who specialize in polar swims. You know, like they drill a hole in the ice or something, and then they go, you know.
it's
like the real extremes of, you know, it makes the polar bear club look like Club Med. You know, so anyway, and then, you know, Netflix, you know, like, I'm watching all these series. I have, I think about six different series going on, you know, and I, you know, I get to a certain point of the plot and then I want to savor it. And I say, okay, let me save this for last. And then I go to another series and kind of a specialist.
You can do that too. Yeah.
So, you know, it's Amazon Prime. Nice, comfortable routine, but I kind of yearning to get back into the office, which we're going to do in a couple of weeks.
Yay.
Yeah, we'll start seeing some patients, and you know, we'll see who shows up. You know, notwithstanding all the, you know, restrictions, and notwithstanding all the, you know, the fear factor, the ick factor of being in Manhattan.
Right.
You know, that's I don't know. It's one thing to get people into lockdown. You know, to motivate them, to scare them sufficiently to forego their incomes and forego their seeing their relatives and, you know, the cabin fever that's all entailed. It's going to be another thing to get people to release the ick factor.
Yeah.
You know, right?
Yeah. That's really something. So.
Because it's a very powerful thing is once you've instilled that fear. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard to unwind that, you know. And I actually, in my column this week in the newsletter, you saw it, of course. I talked about the N95 masks.
Yes.
You know, my experience using an N95 mask, which I dutifully wore at first because, you know, there was it was the premium kind of mask. It really is pretty protective, more so than the cloth masks. The only problem with these N95 masks is they're actually respirators, and they don't let enough air in, and they also prevent the exhaust of carbon dioxide, which is the way that you get rid of waste gases from your body. And they're actually, you know, I came across an article, which was written well before this, to show that hospital personnel who use these N95 masks have impaired coordination and judgment.
Yes.
and also, I think it increases your anxiety level to have high levels of carbon dioxide.
Which doesn't help in terms of the fear factor in everybody. People are already afraid. Add to that a mask that they doesn't know may be inadvertently lowering their oxygen saturation.
No, because you sound like Darth Vader.
You know,
it's like, you know, it's like makes you conscious of your breathing.
May the force be with you.
No, that was yesterday, May the 4th.
May the force be with you.
It's actually a Cinco de Mayo today. As we record this, you'll hear this podcast later, folks. All right. Well, you know, we invite questions of all kinds, radioprogram@AOL.com. And as part of in the spirit of unwinding and lifting the lockdown, there's no longer a moratorium on questions of all kinds. We're going to try and normalize here, but the questions keep coming about coronavirus. So that's still topic A. So we're going to spend considerable time focusing on that during today's Q&A with Layla. So let's hear it. What are some of people's concerns?
We've got an email here from Terry. Dr. Hoffman, in early March, I came down with flu-like symptoms. I went to the doctor and he gave me a standard test for influenza, the nasal swab. The test came back a few minutes later as positive for influenza A. I was sent home with instructions to take Tylenol for any low-grade fever. My symptoms resolved after 2 days. My question is, does this test result, influenza A, rule out the possibility that I had COVID-19?
You know, this brings up, you know, an analogy that is, you know, maybe the experience of some people these days, you know, you go to the market and you say, I want to get some chicken breasts. And you go, and because there's been kind of a shortage, of chicken breasts because of, you know, some of these processing plants are closing down, people have had to get, an alternative. So they go to the market, And I'm sorry, there are no chicken breasts, but you can get, Mrs. Paul's fish sticks. You know, I don't even know if they still sell those, but it's like, okay, come back. You know, you're the husband who's been sent on this suicide mission to go into a store to buy something, you know, with your mask or your protective gear. And you come back and you say, where's the chicken breast? I was going to make, grilled chicken tonight. Grilled chicken. I'm sorry. I got the frozen fish. Well, that's a little bit like, you know, you go to in a couple of months ago, you know, when this is all beginning, there was no way to test for coronavirus. So if you came in, you know, with looking for all the world like he had coronavirus, you know, with fever and cough and, you know, all the symptoms, joint aches, sneezing, they would test you for the flu.
Yeah.
Because that's what they had. That was, I'm sorry, we don't have chicken breasts. We only have, you know, frozen fish sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So that's what happened. And when you tested positive for the flu, it was game over. You don't have coronavirus. You have the flu.
Mm.
Now, I don't think anybody has done a study on whether you could simultaneously have the ill fortune of having influenza and coronavirus. I think that really should be the subject of some research because, you know, people have said, you know, they told me I had the flu, but for all the world, you know, seems like kind of an awful coincidence because I came down with the same symptoms they keep talking about with coronavirus, but they didn't have the test then. Then within a few weeks, they developed the nasal swabs, you know, the painful experience that Trump was talking about. And then they got less invasive nasal swabs. And then finally, maybe a saliva test that might be accurate to test the presence of coronavirus. So the answer is nobody knows, I don't think. And this, we may not be able to inform this person as to whether they were, you know, it's kind of like, having, it's conceivable to have two simultaneous infectious diseases. I mean, usually the body deals with these things one at a time, but.
Yeah. Yeah. So would you say to Terry, go get the test and find out now, or does it matter?
I would say, get the antibody test. Mm. Let's talk a little bit about the antibody test. The antibody tests are not completely reliable. There are a lot of tests on the market. Only a couple of them have been FDA officially condoned, conditionally approved, because they haven't even really done the vetting that they usually do for these tests. Usually to get a test on the market, it takes months and even years sometimes to get them officially approved. We've fast-tracked these tests. Mm-hmm. A lot of labs are offering them. What I've heard is that the problem is also with the validation of the tests, because the tests have been compared to other viruses. So that at least, if you have a positive antibody, you've had a coronavirus. Unfortunately, they haven't been tested against other coronaviruses. Now, there are, besides MERS and SARS, which were, you know, very dangerous and devastating, there are other coronaviruses that cause symptoms that are akin to the common cold. Colds, you know, is a generic term for a condition that's caused by a variety of viruses, including several coronaviruses, also rhinoviruses. Rhino means nose. And so it's conceivable that there might be some interference with a prior cold that might show that you've had a coronavirus with some of the tests that are less specific. Now, hopefully that's not the case. The other thing is we don't, you know, it's not like an on-off switch. It's not binary. If you have antibodies, they might be at a very low level, which indicates that you might only have partial immunity because your immune system didn't elaborate a very strong response to the coronavirus. And that may mean that you may be more vulnerable than somebody who has a very high production of antibodies. We don't even know what the threshold is that's meaningful in terms of protection. And we also don't know, I think it'd be interesting to do a study on someone who definitely had coronavirus, tested positive PCR, you know, with a nasal swab. Mm-hmm. And then watch the antibody test. Do it a month later and then 3 months later, and then 6 months later, then 12 months later, then, you know, 18 months, 2 years, and so on, to see if those antibodies persist or whether they wane. Hmm. And, you know, that may give us some clues as to whether there's permanent resistance. The other thing that, you know, we have to keep in mind is, let's say you do have antibodies to coronavirus, you know, which caused COVID-19. It may be that there will be a COVID-2021, you know, a COVID-21.
Yes.
And that may be slightly different than COVID-19. There may be some cross immunity, mm-hmm. Or not, because it may be distinct, just like with the flu. You know, it's like people who are immune to the flu may be immune because the flu that's coming around this season may resemble the flu that you got 20 years ago as a kid, and now you're immune because it sort of cycles back and forth in terms of its structure. So there's a lot of unknowns about this.
Right, right. And to add to this, Dr. Hoffman, we've got a great question from Michael that I'm sure you'd like to discuss. Michael says, since we know that viruses mutate at a rapid rate, as evidenced by the ineffectiveness of vaccines for the flu when it's targeted a specific flu strain, which has long since mutated, wouldn't the same thing likely happen by the time a vaccine for COVID-19 is developed?
So what they do know about the coronavirus is that the coronavirus is very large as a virus, physically mm-hmm. large. And therefore, it is believed that the coronavirus has more stability. It may have some self-repair mechanisms. You know, we as humans, we undergo mutations all the time. You know, when we go up in a plane, you know, we're hit with radiation that will actually damage our chromosomes and mutate our DNA. But the body has self-repair mechanisms that continually edit and repair the damaged DNA. And viruses are much smaller, much more primitive, but they do have mechanisms to create stability for their DNA. But by the way, it's a good idea for them to have instability, because then they can evolve and adapt. I mean, that's the basis of Darwin's theory of evolution, is, you know, changes occur, and either, you know, it's like survival of the fittest. And the same thing
selection.
Is true
yep.
natural selection. And, you know, if not for some instability in our DNA, we wouldn't evolve. I mean, that first, fish that crawled out of water, you know, wouldn't have turned into a land animal with lungs that breathe, because of, each any tiny mutations that either work in favor of an organism or work against it. So, so it's a good idea to have some mutations, but it's not a good idea to have mutations that go too rapidly, because then, you know, the virus may, change the point where it's no longer a successful virus. It seems to be doing a pretty good job. It's pretty successful at propagating. It's like, it's a success from a natural selection standpoint.
Yeah. And how effective might then a vaccine be?
Well, then, so the idea is that, at least from a theoretical standpoint, they think that a coronavirus vaccine is likely to be of greater of duration than the flu vaccine. That we may or may not, but less likely that we'll have to reinvent the vaccine every year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fingers crossed. All right.
Yeah, but I mean, then again, the question is, can we even develop a vaccine? You know, if that had been the case, we would have developed a vaccine for the common cold. Although, the problem with the common cold, of course, is that there's so many different variations of viruses that cause what we experience as a cold.
True. Okay. That's why there's no effective vaccination for the common colds, right?
Right.
That's a different virus each time. So otherwise, our immune system would remember.
Yes.
And fight the same cold.
And it does. You know, it's like, wow, I've had, it's like your immune system goes, I've had every single variation of the cold. I'm, invulnerable. And then it'll another little tweak and an evolutionary change, and boom, you know, you're exposed to a novel virus.
All right. Michael, Terry, thank you for those questions. We've got another one from Jean, Dr. Hoffman. Is Astragalus a friend or a foe when it comes to COVID-19? Because one thing that Jean found out is that drugs that inhibit interleukin-6, an inflammatory cytokine, are being tried in COVID-19 patients with lung involvement. So in some mouse models, astragalus upregulates IL-6 while lowering other cytokines. And is this a problem? Would this be contributing to a cytokine storm if astragalus works in this way?
Right. And this really at the crux of a lot of arguments about the appropriateness or timing of certain things. For example, elderberry is an immune stimulant. It seems to work to enhance cytokines, which at first might be a good idea because it helps build up your resistance to the onslaught of a virus. So that's a good thing. The question is, you know, if you go into that later stage of cytokine storm, which is uncommon, you know, relatively uncommon, the vast majority of people don't go into cytokine storm. But when that happens, should you rethink using things that stimulate immunity? And you know, a lot of people have debated this issue in the field of natural medicine. And most people have come to the conclusion that the amount of immune stimulation that's delivered by these natural products is on an order of magnitude so trivial compared to the very, very powerful triggering of the immune system by the presence of the virus that it's relatively inconsequential. It's a little like, you know, spitting into a, you know, a gale wind. You know, it's not going to make that much of a difference. Others have said, and you know, their position is equally reasonable, that, you know, maybe you can take at the very early phases of an infection, things like elderberry and astragalus. But then, you know, as the infection progresses, if it does, you may want to hold off.
Okay.
And we don't know, and then, you know, more research needs to be done on that. You know, there's studies on astragalus. You know, I have one here as we're talking. I just pulled it up. Traditional Chinese medicine in the treatment of patients infected with SARS-CoV-2, a review in perspective, and it's a Chinese study. You know, the question is there room for traditional Chinese medicine? Astragalus, of course, is something that is part of the armamentarium of TCM, traditional Chinese medicine. And what they say here is there are quite compelling evidences that support the notion that TCM has beneficial effects in the treatment or prevention of SARS. They say the dramatic reduced fatality from late May in Beijing was believed to be associated with the widespread use of TCM as a supplement to the conventional therapy. Well, you know, they're going to have to study that further. Okay. And, you know, these days, things that come out of China, you know, we have to say are a little bit suspect. And, you know, maybe it's promotion for what it, in effect, is a very vibrant industry and source of, you know, foreign currency for the Chinese economy. You know, you know, what's interesting is there's like, what, 1.3 billion people in China. There's a lot, there's a, probably an equal number of people, people of Chinese descent, cultural Chinese outside of China, you know, and that's a big market. And then, of course, there's many people in Europe and Africa and North America, and of course Latin America, who say, you know, I'm using a traditional Chinese medicine remedy, and so, you know, there's a big economic stake. So among the things, astragalus is listed as something to protect from external pathogens, according to traditional Chinese medicine theory. And reportedly, it has antiviral, anti-inflammatory, and immunoregulatory effects. So there's the nice literature on astragalus. I think astragalus is a plausible treatment.
Gene, thank you for that question. Dr. Hoffman, I think this may be a good time for a word from our sponsor.
Yes, that would be appropriate. Thank you. Let's allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. Here goes. There's never been a more important time to ensure your immune system is operating at its peak. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a new natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, created exclusively to help promote a better immune response. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea. Future Farm's elderberry with zinc and echinacea is the first to combine these three powerful ingredients together. Elderberry is packed with antioxidants, vitamins, and may boost your immune system. Echinacea has been shown to activate chemicals in the body that decrease inflammation, and zinc activates T lymphocytes. Low zinc has been associated with increased susceptibility. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsor. This is what makes Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions. Actually, it's a good time to pause and move to part two, but give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two.
I wonder, Dr. Hoffman, if you have information on pneumatosis coli and how to heal this condition.
True. It's been a long time since I fell asleep during that lecture at medical school. So I'll see if I can recall that. Give me a minute while we flip to part two on today's Intelligent Medicine podcast. Stay with us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today with Layla, it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. We'll be right back.